This gentleman that we're talking with today, his name is Don DeLuzio, and I've known Don for quite a few years. He's the president of Trinity Tile in Orlando, a very successful business. And as is always the case in life, when you get to know somebody, you find out there's a story behind the story, right? Mm-hmm. And I found out Don's story behind the story having to do with the fact that Don has four children of his own, mm-hmm. And they've been involved in sports, baseball and basketball and I think maybe one in volleyball. I can't remember. He'll clarify that for us. But then suddenly, Don found himself with a family of nine children.
Oh, wow.
Five extra children joined the troops. And that changed the sport dynamics and family dynamics dramatically. But Don's an unusual guy, so he's going to tell us about that today.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
So, Don, are you ready to join us?
I am. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's very, I'm very excited to hear what you have to say. It's very interesting.
And David, thank you for that introduction. I haven't had one like that in years.
Yeah, David's really good about that.
Yeah. Well, Don, you're absolutely someone that that I admire just because of how well you handle, I think, all situations, business situations. I always thought that you've been so calm and cool, and I've been curious to ask you if you're just as calm and cool and collected when it comes to dealing with, let's start with your own children. You have four children, and are you still as calm as you're standing on the sidelines at a baseball game or a basketball game?
David, I hate to say that I'm not. Now, I've learned to tone it down a bit over the years, and I guess as parents we learn those things. You know, we make mistakes with our older children, and the benefactor are the younger children, so they get a more calm down parent than the older ones got. But still, that's still a work in progress.
I totally understand. A good friend of mine admitted to me the other day, and he has grown children. He says, I have to admit to you, he says, I got booted out of my son's soccer game 25 years ago, and he says, I'm still embarrassed about that. But he says, I was a crazy soccer dad back then, and it took me a while to learn my lesson.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that my oldest daughter, Alexa, you know, it got to the point where I think she would have rather me not attend games, not so much what I was yelling, but, you know, the way that I would talk to her after a game. And so you realize that, boy, what am I doing if my own child doesn't want me at a game?
Yeah, one of the goals in our program of Growing Champions for Life is to have parents learn this strategy of how to behave, how to handle themselves, how to send the right messages so that after a game, your kids actually want to talk to you about the game even though you were there. And I think that should be the goal of every parent, that your child actually wants to talk to you about the crucial play of the game, actually wants to ask you questions about what they could have done better rather than, oh boy, here comes Dad's lecture again.
Yeah, absolutely, David. You hit it right on.
Well, tell us now, give us the breakdown, first of all, with your own children, of what sports they were in, and just kind of give us an overview.
We have my oldest daughter, Alexa. She just turned 20. She plays basketball at Florida State on a basketball scholarship. And then the next is Ben. He's 15. He'll be a sophomore this year, and he plays all three sports, football, basketball, and baseball.
Wow.
And Brenna, she's the next down. She is 11. And she's a volleyball and lacrosse player. And then Joe is our youngest. He's 9, and he's a basketball, baseball, and dancer.
So everybody's like multi-sport here. You've got something going on every single season. I would guess that sometimes probably more, some of these of your children might be playing multiple sports in one season?
Yes, correct. Yeah, like today, David, between the nine that there are, I think there's a basketball camp, there's a football conditioning, there's a 7-on-7, there's a volleyball practice. That's all happening today.
And will you get to see any of this?
I'll pick up one from the football workout and go to the baseball workout for the other.
Man, your schedule must be booked. So tell us the story of how you then found yourself the guardian of five extra children, and this happened several years ago now, right?
Yeah, it's been 2005 really started the journey. Alexa, our oldest daughter, was very good friends, best friends actually, with a young lady by the name of Crystal Thomas, and through their relationship we met the Thomas family. Natalie Thomas, the mother, was stricken, had been battling cancer, breast cancer, for a number of years, and then she lost that battle the end of 2005, actually, in January 2006, as she passed. And so the kids were without a parent. Their father had been in prison for the last 7 years, so they were without a parent. Their grandparents, the only surviving grandparents, were too old to really care for the kids. So Natalie had put in her will that we would become the guardians of the children upon her death. And so we really didn't know what all of that looked like, but we knew that the Lord wanted us to step in. And so we began that journey. We also began the journey of having conversations with their father, who we didn't know. And then he was released a year later from prison. So what we thought was, you know, at the beginning was going to be a lifetime journey with the kids, turned into be really a gap filler and transition them back into their father's life, which the two younger ones, they didn't really, you know their dad because he had gone to prison when they were just infants and toddlers. So it really was, it really was a unique experience, a blessing, and, you know, still goes on today. The father is now out, and he is doing a wonderful job being a parent to all five kids. Two of those kids are now in college, one playing basketball at Duke, Crystal, and the other, Lauren, she's playing volleyball at Liberty. So they're doing fantastic. And then the other three, you know, you talk about athletes, but they're all tremendous athletes as well. Erica is 16, and she's just a tremendous volleyball player, about almost 6'3 now.
Wow.
And then Vic, he is the youngest, the only boy. He is 13, and he's going to be a heck of a football and basketball player. And then Kelly, she's the youngest. She'll turn 10 this August, and she enjoys both basketball and volleyball like her older sisters.
So you've got six girls and three boys. I mean, that's nine kids. That's too short of a football squad. Or let's see, you're only one short of a full rotation in basketball. Is that right?
And
I guess I'm just curious, as you discovered that not only did you have all these extra children, but they all were athletic and had an interest in athletics, that complicates life tremendously.
Yeah, it was, I guess, David, to use the best sports metaphor, you know, we went sort of from a man-to-man defense to a zone defense. You know, so we had to pick out almost geographically, I had to pick out certain segments of the city where they were grouped, and that's kind of where we broke up, and we would divide and conquer, and then we'd meet home at 8:30 or 9 o'clock, try to get them dinner and a bath, and they'd go to bed.
Right.
Oh, gosh,
it's amazing. I mean, it's a true test of your management skills. But besides the managing of schedule, I want to talk about the other side of this, the human side. How did this change your approach, and as you took responsibility for five extra children, from an emotional standpoint? Because all these kids have emotional needs, not just transportation needs to the next practice, but they're all going through the roller coaster of sports.
Yeah, well, they're all going through the roller coaster of sports, and really going through the roller coaster of adolescent life. You know, the girls, when they came over, three of the girls were, you know, in the ranges of, actually four of the girls were in the ranges from 12 to 16. So, you know, all the changes in the body were taking place. So you're dealing with those issues, not only with your children, but now the fact that you've got five other children that you know, but, you know, things are different when you're living under the same household.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're adjusting to that, I think, and then add to that the fact that we were different racially. You know, we're a white family, and this was a black family, so you had those dynamics going on. I can tell you a funny story. When the first night that we got together as a family, we got together and we're just talking, and we would generally pray together. And so we were just going around the circle, and each person was praying for the person next to them. And we got to Kelly, who was the youngest. At that time, I think she was five, and she looked at the person next to her, and she said, with a straight face, she goes, "I'm sorry, I can't pray for white people." You know, and everybody, at first everybody didn't know what to do, and then just this huge eruption of laughter broke out and really kind of broke the ice for everybody.
The things that come out of the mouths of babes, right? Yeah. Now, in addition to those differences, there's differences between boys and girls. And what did you experience as the father figure here in dealing with the boys and their emotional needs versus the girls? Anything that you can remember about that?
Well, I think, David, as it relates to probably, you know, as I put in a picture of athletics, girls are, golly, they just, you know, they don't respond to what I would call the constructive criticism nearly as well as the boys. And maybe that was just in our household, or maybe that's something that's more common. But I know that when I would try to apply the way that I was coached to the girls, they didn't respond very well. You know, you go back to how you talk to them after the game, and I was always coached and taught, you know, there was be nine things that you did right in a game, and that one thing that you didn't do right, and that was always the thing that was highlighted, and say, this is what you need to work on for the next time or the next game.
The
and
girls
so
don't
I
like
would
that.
Focus I would focus on that with the girls, and boy, I found out that they just didn't respond very well. Where with the boys, you know, they were more engaged, and although they would like to hear good things, they would take the constructive feedback better, it seemed, than the girls did.
Mm-hmm. And that didn't matter whether they were biologically your parents, your children, or not. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, and also you also saw the same thing with school, you know, and the way they responded to their class and to homework and to grades. It just seemed that they really needed to be encouraged and needed to be uplifted, where the boys didn't need as much of that.
Right. We had a guest a number of weeks ago, Don, that made the comment that boys, let's say it the other way, they said girls need to feel good so that they can play well, and boys go to play well so they can feel good.
Yeah, boy, that hits the nail on the head.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, I thought that was pretty on target for that. So did your approach need to change? Maybe tell me a little bit about how your philosophy has evolved as a sport parent and how you deal with your kids as they've evolved, as they've gotten older, and you've gotten wiser, as you said. What did you start doing differently that you didn't do right in the beginning?
Well, I think, David, it goes back to, you know, that highlighting that those nine things that they did right and really making them feel good about what they're doing, or if they did play well, letting them know that they played well and building a platform that would allow you then to be more effective. If you do have some constructive feedback or criticism to give them, at least now you've built a platform, I call it a platform of trust, where they're more receptive to that constructive feedback than they are if you just hammer them with the constructive feedback and you really don't talk about the things that they did well or the successes that they've had.
So you start with the praise and then you move in with the criticism?
Yeah, or sometimes I don't even bring up those things that they didn't do well because, you know, they know that they didn't do those things well. It's not like I need to tell them that.
Right.
I think that's the gold mine right there, Don, is that they already know. Am I right?
I bet you
9 times out of 10, you weren't telling them anything they didn't already know.
Yeah, especially when they're playing at the level that these kids are playing at. They know, you know, what the stakes are. They know what they need to do. And if for some reason they didn't do well, the last thing they want to hear that from is their parents.
That's right. That's exactly right. So you had to develop the self-discipline to give them the nine things they did well and then just close it off
or
hold back.
Exactly, or look for that opportunity that you know that you may be able to present the constructive feedback when you've got through that and they feel good about what they've done, or they you know that you just know that there is a platform that now would allow me to communicate this more effectively, because the funny thing is that I may think that I'm telling them something that they don't know or that's going to help them. But just the opposite is happening. They're tuning me out even further, and I have less chance of being effective with them.
You put a name on that platform, and I really like that. The platform of trust really has to be established first before you're going to be allowed in with that other information. And so let's talk about how do we build that platform of trust so that the other kind of information is welcome at the opportune time. Is what any strategies there of how to build the platform of trust?
Boy, David, as I said in the beginning, it's a work in progress. But I think first that they've got to know that that their parents are their biggest fans, that it's a safe place to go, that they can go to their parents about anything, and when things are not going their way, that they know that this is a place where they can go and be built back up. And I'll just give you kind of an example. I talked about my oldest daughter, Alexa, who, you know, there was a period in her career where she didn't really want me to be at a game because she knew what she was going to get after the game. And where that has now really evolved, and, you know, she's a collegiate player playing for Florida State, and, you know, she had her freshman year last year and had the ups and downs of a freshman year. And when she was down, you know, I really felt like she was coming to me, and I really felt like our relationship had really improved and evolved around the area of sports, where she felt like it was a safe place to come to her dad and really, you know, spill her guts about what was going on and what she was feeling, and you know, the pains and frustrations that she was having about going through a full season of college athletics.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Don DeLuzio, who is the proud parent of four children of his own and the guardian over five others, all of whom are athletes from a college. How old is your oldest now in college? 21, did you say?
Yeah, Crystal just turned. Matter of fact, she just turned 21 on June 10th.
Okay, so and the youngest one is, what did you say? I think 13.
The youngest one is 9.
Oh, 9. That's right. All the way down to 9. So that's quite a spread. Now, I have found, Don, and I'd like you to comment on this, that there's really two categories of kinds of conversations we can have with our kids around sports. One is the sports-specific kind of category. In other words, if I talk to you about your jump shot, or I talk to you about your corner kick or your swing, those are all sports-specific skill kinds of conversations. But the other kind of conversation that's so important for parents to have with their kids are more in the character area, in the life lesson area, where we're trying to coach our kids to win at life, not just win at sports. And I mean, I know you're a sports guy. You were a competitor yourself. You were an athlete. If you could talk for a moment about how you find yourself dividing your attention between the character lessons versus the skill lessons, what would you say about that?
Well, that's a good question, David. You know, I guess the first thing that we try to, as parents, both Sherry and I try to reiterate to all the kids, is that there's really no separation between, you know, what they're doing on the athletic field versus what they're doing in life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how can they become a productive part of their team? I think one of the biggest things that I find in the business world is so many people that are working don't really understand the concept of a team. And so it's very difficult, and one of the big emphasis values that we place on anybody that we hire is, you know, what kind of experience have they had with a team, and what does team, you know, really mean to them? And so it's really been expressing the whole, you know, we versus I.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the 9 kids came into the household, there was a whole lot of sharing that had to go on. You know, they had to share rooms, they had to share closets, they had to share clothes. I mean, there just was a whole lot. And I think that was one of the life lessons that we learned as a family, of how important it was. There was no way that we could have gotten through it had we all not been willing to give a little and sacrifice some of our personal wants and needs for the betterment of the group. So,
and space.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's right.
Which is big for teenagers.
Yeah. I find that while parents are reluctant sometimes, they almost think that it's too it's too out there, it's too abstract to talk about some of these life lessons and character things. I find that deep down inside, kids want to know the answers to some of life's big questions. You know, where does my self-confidence come from, and how come I lose it every once in a while? How do I get it back? And how do I go ahead and sacrifice and still feel good about it when I know my own batting average is going down, when I have to lay down that bunt, you know? And there's big issues here, and kids look up to the people who come along and give them the answers to those questions.
And I don't personally think it can come from anywhere else but the home. I mean, there certainly are examples of kids that have come from homes that weren't the best, and they have been able to rise above that. But for the vast majority, I think it's got to start in the home, and you know, it's got to be emphasized in the home, where they're never going to be able to translate that into anything they do in school or in athletics, or you know, when the batting average is slumping and they're asked to, you know, to sacrifice, you know, put down a bunt that may hurt the batting average even more. Are they willing to do that if their minutes are cut down and they've gone from, you know, 25 minutes to 18 minutes? How are they going to respond to that? And you know, are they gonna ask somebody else to step in and solve that problem, or are they gonna be willing to, you know, to hit that problem head on and confront it themselves?
Right.
Those are things that continue to come up, and you know, we've tried to, as parents of athletes in those environments, to make sure that the kids take ownership of what they're doing and keep the parents really on the sidelines where they belong.
All right, so there's a great perspective right there, is that who's taking responsibility for a child's sport? And we've got to find ways for our kids to take ownership more and more, to own their sport and take responsibility for their choices and their decisions, right? And I think as parents, we keep trying to rescue them, and then we end up being the ones that own it more than they do.
Yeah, absolutely, David. I guess it's a natural tendency for us to want to step in and to rescue, and I think that's the worst thing that can happen, because as we know, they're going to continue to have these challenges in life, and if they're not able to begin to learn how to solve those problems on their own, then they're going to have a hard time being productive for any company.
Did your children ever share with you or show signs of the fact that maybe they resented having these extra five bodies in the family, and suddenly the attention that they were used to receiving was, you know, divided by four, and now is divided by nine?
Yeah, you know, David, it surfaced in different ways. You know, some would, a couple of our kids, they were you know, more outspoken, and then you kind of saw them being drawn in a little bit and wouldn't speak as much. You know, Alexa, who was our oldest, you know, she went now from being the oldest to being the second oldest, and at the time Crystal was being heavily recruited, and you know, the spotlight was on her. So, you know, I think that affected Alexa. You know, not until really probably a year or two after did they really start to realize that, hey, here's all these dynamics that were going on, and maybe there were certain things that I didn't handle as well, but now I have that as a reference so that I can be better prepared when similar things come up in life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they surface. They're, you know, as humans, we have that natural tendency to be self-absorbed and
sure,
self-focused, and so there was certainly those dynamics that went on.
When the children all get a little older and look back on this decision that you made to embrace these five children and support them in all the ways that you did, what lessons do you think they'll see out of that? What do you think is going to come out of this in the long haul?
You know, David, what I hope, and it may sound cliche-ish, but it's really the truth, is just the selflessness. What they all went through. I mean, you had a family of five that had just lost their mother, so that was tragic and traumatic. And their dad was in prison, and a couple of the younger ones didn't really even know him that well. So imagine how that was, all of that coming down, and then moving into a new household. You know, and the way that they adapted what they had to give up to to really become a part of another family. And then our kids, you know, giving up their parents, if you will, or, mm-hmm. are now having to
share.
Divide that time up amongst five other kids. I think it's had a huge impact on them. And as they get older and Lord willing, have their own families, you know, I think that's where the life lessons could become even more valuable.
It shows compassion and a sense of charity and giving back. And
oh, there's so many lessons wrapped up in this. And again, once again, putting sport in the proper perspective, sport is not the center of the universe. It's a chapter in one's life, no matter how long you play the game. And Don, you and Sherry are to be commended for tackling such a responsibility and being able to deliver unconditional love, not only to your own kids, but to the kids that weren't yours, no matter how they played the game on any given day.
Yeah, well, thank you, David. It's amazing that this is kind of a gift that just keeps on giving. And, you know, these nine kids, they give us back far more than we could ever give them.
Very cool. Any closing thoughts about what you've learned and what you think is so important for other parents to know, just dealing with their own kids? Most parents are not going to have to handle what you have chosen to take on. What words of advice would you give to sport parents today?
You know, David, you probably experienced this as an athlete. I know I experienced as an athlete. I think every athlete, no matter what level they are, experiences this. But athletics is not who we are. It's what we do. And, you know, the more that we can really grasp that concept, I think the better off that we'll be as athletes, as parents, and then as productive citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I think too much we try to identify by what we do on the athletic field and make that who we are, and then that's just not the case.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. We are more than what we do, because when the day comes that you don't do it anymore,
then what are you?
Then what are you? Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah,
exactly right.
And there's maybe the most powerful life lesson to teach our kids is, yeah, you're more than that. Well, thank you so much, Don. This has been so much fun and so enlightening, and I appreciate your candidness and sharing so many things about your family and your experience, and what a blessing you have been to all these children. They're going to be superstars in life thanks to you and Sherry.
That's for sure.
Well, David, guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate being on with you.